Science has discovered that energy is the basis of all matter. The Bible agrees with that. It teaches that God made all things out of his spirit. Jeremiah 32 verse 17 states, "Ah, Lord God, behold, thou hast made the heaven and the earth by thy great power and stretched out arm, and there is nothing too hard for thee." His spirit is the energy by which he creates or performs. But while scientists agree with the Bible that energy is the basis of all matter, they, or many of them, disagree that it was God's spirit or energy that made all things. How has life on earth come about? This question has produced three alternative answers, yet only one of them can be correct. Firstly, that the world was prepared for the reception of life before any life was placed upon it by the Creator. That life was created by the Creator, the living God, in a specific logical order of creation. This was revealed to man in the simple and straightforward account of creation that has been written down and preserved down the ages in the Bible. That's the chapter that Brother Jim has just read for us. Belief in creation is a matter of faith in the Creator's record. The second option: that this planet happened to be a suitable site for the natural elements to somehow become organized into a simple form of life. And then in the course of millions of years, this simple life evolved into the vast complexity of life that is evident today. This is called the theory of evolution, of which there are many variations, more of which have been proved scientifically as the power, none of which have been proved scientifically, as the process cannot be repeated. Hence, belief in evolution is also a matter of faith. The third option: that this planet was prepared by God for the reception of life, and a simple form of life was implanted on Earth, having the capacity to develop into the many forms of life we see today. This is known as theistic evolution and is intended to unite the concept of a supernatural creation with the theory of evolution. Does it really matter which view one takes? One scientist stated that the doctrine of evolution, if consistently accepted, makes it impossible to believe the Bible. So the challenge has been made. The choice is either one or the other: chance or design, an accident of nature, or the purpose of the Creator. The choice is a serious one when you realise how that choice affects one's way of thinking, philosophy of life, and moral behaviour. A perceptive scientist, Professor J. Holmes, wrote, "Few people who accept the Darwinian theory of evolution realise its far-reaching import, especially in social science." Darwinism, consistently applied, would measure goodness in terms of survival value. That these observations have turned out to be true can be seen in recent history, in the lowering of moral standards, the abandonment of faith, and the survival of the fittest in the world of commerce. In complete contrast, the Christian ethic taught by Jesus leads to the conclusion that the meek shall inherit the earth. And to this man will I look, even to him that is poor and of a contrite spirit, and trembleth at my word. Those quotations you will recognise, taken from Matthew 5, verse 5, and Isaiah 66, verse 2. Creation of life on a prepared earth is seen as the beginning of the great preparation, when eventually, in spite of man's folly and opposition, as we read in Numbers 14, verse 21, as truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of God. The alternatives of evolution or creation, of chance or design, are much more than a choice between an undervalued Bible and a glorified science. The choice is between two philosophies. The divine or godly philosophy of a positive purpose of life, and the atheistic and negative philosophy of the survival of the fittest, with its continued violence, ruthlessness, destruction, and hopelessness. While some people claim that man will solve his problems through the advances of science, the record of history is that science is partly to blame for the problems that are mounting up. Pollution of the planet, the extinction of species, the threat of nuclear war, these are some of the fruits of the philosophy of evolution and the way it has influenced science. Let us now look at the evidence for design in the universe. Sir James Jeans, an eminent astronomer who did so much to popularise the study of the heavens, wrote, "A scientific study of the universe has suggested a conclusion which may be summed up in the statement that the universe appears to have been designed by a pure mathematician." Then he continued, "Everything points with overwhelming force to a definite creation, or series of events of creation, at some time or times not infinitely remote. The universe cannot have originated by chance out of the present ingredients, neither can it always have been the same as now." The world-famous scientist, Professor Albert Einstein, renowned for his theory of relativity, wrote, "The scientist's religious feelings takes the form of a rapturous amazement at the harmony of natural law, which reveals an intelligence of such superiority that compared with it, all the systematic thinking and acting of human beings is an utterly insignificant reflection." A rather long sentence, but it goes a long way to highlight the huge difference between the supreme intelligence of the divine creator, God, compared with the rather puny efforts of man. We have a quotation concerning God's ordering of creation in Isaiah chapter 40, verses 12 and 13. No need to turn to it. I'll read it. Who hath measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, and meted out heaven with the span, and comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance? Who hath directed the Spirit of the Lord, or being his counsellor hath taught him? The amazing picture of the Creator measuring the oceans follows a very touching picture of the same Creator in the previous verse. He shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs with his arm and carry them away in his bosom, and shall gently lead those that are with young. The pioneer scientist Sir Isaac Newton, well known for his explanation of the law of gravity, wrote, "This most beautiful system of the sun, planets and comets could only proceed from the counsel and dominion of an intelligent and powerful being." The Lord God summarized his creative work in very simple and understandable terms in Isaiah 45 verse 12. "I have made the earth and created man upon it. I, even my hands, have stretched out the heavens, and all their host have I commanded." Unlike the other planets of the solar system, which follow wide elliptical circuits, the Earth has a nearly circular orbit. Earth's orbit is unique, yet it is essential to life. If the Earth had a typical planetary circuit of the Sun, the planet would be alternately baked and frozen, with temperatures that no life could endure. While the Earth's range of temperature varies, it suffers none of the extremes that the other planets do. The man who wrote Psalm 19 verse 1 expressed the ideal human reaction when he said, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament," or expanse, "showeth his handiwork." We've looked at the evidence for design in the universe. Now we shall have a look at the evidence for design on planet Earth. Dr. Morrison, president of the New York Academy of Science, was quoted as saying that so many essential conditions are necessary for life to exist on Earth that it is mathematically impossible that all of them could exist in a proper relationship by chance on Earth at one time. What are these essential conditions for life? The air we breathe is a balanced mixture of gases that is just right for life. The oxygen that is so essential is only 21% of the atmosphere. If it were much more than this, then the air would be dangerously combustible. If much less, we would be fighting for breath. Most of the air is composed of the inert gas nitrogen, with tiny traces of other gases. Our air is beautifully balanced to sustain life. The water that is so essential for life can also be taken for granted. It is only when it is scarce or badly polluted that most people realise its value. Our life on Earth is dependent on the warmth and energy emitted by the sun. Yet if we were only 5% nearer to the sun, the heat would be so intense that the planet would become sterile. While if we were only 5% more distant, Earth would be in a permanent deep freeze. The moon has no light of itself. It is a purpose-made reflector of the light of the sun. The men who landed on the moon discovered that its surface is covered with countless millions of little glass beads, which act as reflectors. Could it have been accidental that the moon was provided with this feature? In what other ways does the moon affect life on Earth? It is vital to life on Earth that the moon should be placed where it is, at 240,000 miles away. If it were only 200,000 miles, its effects upon the ocean tides of the Earth would be catastrophic. 50-foot tidal surges would sweep the coasts. Vast areas of land would be uninhabitable. If there was no moon, our oceans would be stagnant and putrefying ponds. It is the moon's tidal influence that keeps cleansing currents of water on the move in every ocean all the time. Nearly 3,000 years ago, the wise king said the following words concerning the wisdom that comes from God. I'm just going to read a few verses from Proverbs chapter 8. Proverbs chapter 8 and verse 25. Before the mountains were settled, before the hills was I brought forth. While as yet he had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the highest part of the dust of the world. When he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he set a compass upon the face of the depth. When he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the fountains of the deep, when he gave to the sea his decree that the waters should not pass his commandment, when he appointed the foundations of the earth, then I was by him, as one brought up with him, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him. In our consideration of this subject, of creation, not evolution, we could look at the evidence for design in the human body. The brain, the eye, and the ear. The eye is composed of many different types of cell, each carefully placed to complete the organ of sight. Sir Isaac Newton wrote, "Was the eye contrived without skill in optics, and the ear without knowledge of sound?" Even Charles Darwin had to admit in his book, Origin of the Species, he said, that the eye, with all its inimitable contrivances, could have been formed by natural selection, seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest degree. Added to these comments by men of science is the statement of the Creator found in Psalm 94, verses 8 and 9, which I'll read. "Understand, ye brutish among the people, and ye fools, when will ye be wise? He that planted the ear, shall he not hear? He that formed the eye, shall he not see?" On the same subject, the wise man who wrote in Proverbs 20 verse 12, "The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord hath made even both of them." It would be sensible to point out that unless all parts of the visual system were put together in the right way and at the same time, there would be no sight. The hearing ear is a complex part of the body to enable the brain to register sound. But the ears are for more than hearing: a sense of balance, the movements of the head, consciousness of gravity, and the movements of the body are all detected by this tiny apparatus. The ear is such a beautifully designed system that it could not have evolved on a bit at a time until it was complete. Each separate part would have been useless until assembled in the right way. Science is based on facts, and the facts about such complex parts of the body all point to a supernatural and superhuman origin, employing infinite intelligence. In the beginning, God created. Without these first words of the Bible, nothing else would make sense. The good news of how life began is told in easily understood language in the first chapter of Genesis, which also tells how all the needs for life on earth were provided for. This world and its variety of life demonstrate the handiwork of a superb designer and creator, who is also a caring and loving sustainer. To think, as many do, that these millions of intricately formed living things were the result of countless beneficial accidents of nature is neither reasonable nor scientific. So what is the purpose of it all? The Creator has communicated with man through the Bible, written by divinely inspired men. It is in the Bible that the reader is told how this beautiful planet, with all its wonderful variety of life, was created to reflect something of his power, the character and the love of its creator. The Lord God spoke through his prophet Isaiah, saying in Isaiah 45 verse 18, "Thus saith the Lord that created the heavens, God himself that formed the earth and made it. He hath established it. He created it not in vain. He formed it to be inhabited. I am the Lord, and there is none else." The controversy of creation versus evolution is a huge subject. If we had time, we could look at the arguments of evolution and fossils, whether mutations produce evolution or not, and of course the age of the earth debate. These would further expose the false teaching of evolution. The greatest objection to it is not that it is false, but that it sets out deliberately to destroy faith in God. It advances the idea, both false and dangerous, that man is capable of bringing about his own improvement without God or Christ. The theory disposes with the need of God, and therefore indicates that mankind is not subject to his control, nor will benefit from obedience to his teaching and commands. Modern society is increasingly being governed by such a philosophy, so that human conduct is becoming more impatient of restraint. And pleasing oneself takes precedence over pleasing God. That is why modern standards are relaxed, and immorality, crime and violence are becoming more common, to become almost a way of life. We have a clear choice to make, and it should be an easy one. Let us consider the wonders of creation, whether viewed in the heavens or upon the earth beneath, and see them as the work of the Creator. It is inconceivable that God should have arranged for creation without purpose, and there must be a future purpose for life on this earth. What can the present offer you? A life of frustration and difficulty, ending in death? Are you really satisfied with things, or are they as they exist on earth at this present? The Bible has a solution to these things. Although people are subjected to pressure today that can drive them away from the things of God and the Bible, we must show determination to resist these influences and to see the Bible as our source of truth.